Six Figure Developer Podcast, a podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I am Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.
Today we're speaking with Kent C. Dodds. Kent C. Dodds is a JavaScript engineer at PayPal and is active in the open source community. He's also a teacher. He likes his family, JavaScript, and React. Welcome, Kent.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So before we sort of jump into the meat of the podcast, would you just like to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started in the industry?
Yeah, sure. I can give you a super long story, or I can give you the abbreviated one, which I think is what you're looking for. When I was born, no, just kidding. When I was younger, I had a friend who was really into programming. He tried to teach me. And it just didn't compute for me. I was super confused. So I decided I like computers, but I mostly like playing them, or making videos, on computers, not actually programming them. I do remember playing, I was pretty into StarCraft and, Warcraft, and I would make my little scenarios, you know, and you could do some really interesting things there. That was sort of programming a little bit. And so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I never really got into it until college, when I decided I wanted to do electrical engineering because I thought computers are cool. And my brother did electrical engineering. And I took a computer systems class, did not really like it very much. We did zeros and ones and then assembly code and then C. And it was I did okay. I think I got an A, but I just didn't. I thought sitting in front of a computer for 8 hours a day just does not sound like fun. So anyway, I went on a mission, came back after 2 years, and somehow landed in information systems. And I took a programming class that I wasn't looking forward to, but I ended up getting an internship where I was expected to do a bunch of monkey work that was really boring. And so I said, well, I'm learning some Java stuff. I'll automate some of these things I'm doing, and ended up automating the entire job. They were super happy with me because I got way more finished than they could have ever expected. Because the computer was doing it now. And, they even had me present to the board. It was a nonprofit. So the people who give them the money, they had this little, kid in college give this presentation, about this automation that I did. So anyway, that's kind of how I got into programming. It was when I realized that you could solve real world problems with software, rather than just let's build a compiler because that sounds like a lot of fun, or hey, check out this sweet editor that you can't exit called Vim, a whole bunch of, let's build a linked list because who doesn't want to have a linked list laying around, right? It was when I realized, I can actually do useful things with programs and I can build stuff myself. That's when I started thinking, okay, this programming thing's kind of fun. Eventually wound up in JavaScript and have not left because I love it so much.
And you're currently doing JavaScript at PayPal. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So PayPal is very heavily invested in JavaScript. I think PayPal was the biggest company to adopt Java, to adopt Node at one point. It was one of the early adopters, and we have Bill Scott to thank for that primarily. So we do a lot of Node. There's definitely a lot of Java and C going on further down the stack, and I never have even seen any of that code, to be honest. I've been there 3 years almost, but. Yeah, so most of the Node stuff that we're doing is kind of middle tier kind of stuff. Actually, when I started at PayPal, when I was on a product team, I was working in the Node layer to communicate with downstream services that may have been written in Node, but also could be Java or C. And then we took that to render our front-end app, which right around the time I got there, most we were trying to move over to React. But lots of it was using Dust templates, which is like a LinkedIn thing, rendering, server rendering everything in Node, and Backbone on the front end and stuff like that. So yeah, tons of JavaScript at PayPal, and lots of Node going on, really, really actively developing Node. And I primarily spend most of my time in the front end and in tooling stuff. So I do a lot of stuff in Node, mostly for tooling related things or testing. And then my actual product stuff goes in the browser.
Very cool. And you also do quite a bit with React these days. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm pretty heavy into React. I was way into AngularJS back about 3 years ago. I was waiting for Angular to come out, and just like everybody else, and finally started to get impatient and decided to switch over to React. And that was part of the the reasoning for me making a job switch. My company was like, yeah, it doesn't make sense for us to switch. We're pretty happy with what we have. So I said, okay, I'll find somewhere else, and found PayPal. React has been awesome. And it's gone through subtle transformations over the years that I've been using it, getting better and better. And I'm super, super excited about the future of React. By the time this airs, I guess it should air here pretty soon, but there's React Conf that's coming up in a couple weeks, and there are going to be some really, really awesome things announced there. And so I couldn't be more excited about the future of React. It's a pretty exciting space right now.
Can't believe you're not a fan of the, 37 release candidates for Angular 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a good change that they decided, okay, now we're going to do Semver, and we made some assumptions when we built AngularJS. Those assumptions were wildly off, and so now we're kind of switching over to, to a better framework. So, there's no doubt in my mind that Angular is better than AngularJS by leaps and bounds. But yeah, I kind of got tired of it. It was a long, long time, 2 years or something after they announced it. That is a very long time. And in addition, the Angular stuff, I spent way too much time trying to figure out what was wrong with my template. And learning the DSL for the template, just like when I moved on to React, there was so much stuff that I'd invested in my learning and my knowledge that I couldn't take with me. It was stuck in AngularJS. Lots of that stuff I couldn't even take to Angular. So I had to drop it one way or another. And I wasn't super excited about spending a lot of time learning the new Angular and all of this other stuff that I couldn't take with me anywhere else. And so with React, I feel a lot more comfortable with the stuff I'm learning because I spend most of my time learning JavaScript. And so if I am ever dissatisfied with React, I can move on somewhere else and I'll take my JavaScript knowledge with me.
Yeah. When Ash and Clayton and I last worked together, we were all working in AngularJS 1.5. I was working on a training course around the time when all the release candidates came out for Angular 2, and actually had to abandon it because I couldn't keep up with the changes with life and other things getting in the way as well. So with my very next position, I actually took a position that was starting to work with React and kind of continue going that way as well, and really never looked back.
Yeah, I actually gave a talk at Philly ETE. It's in Philadelphia. It's emerging technologies in the enterprise or something like that. And a really awesome conference. And my talk was about Angular 2 before it was released, way before it was released. And literally the day that I gave my talk, half of the things that I talked about were no longer true.
Yeah, all of it is wrong now.
Yeah.
that's one of the... So I'm not a super fan of either React or Angular 2, but I will say that at least React, there's a small amount of things that you have to learn to be productive. Whereas with Angular 2, it's learn all the things and then you'll still be confused and maybe you'll make something that works.
Yeah, that's kind of been my impression as well. A lot of people do kind of rag on React for being hard to learn. It's not so much React that's hard to learn, but it's the ecosystem around it and the language too. Like people really struggle with classes in particular in JavaScript. They're just tricky, especially because the weird way that this works in JavaScript is kind of like wonky. And so that's really unfortunate. And the ecosystem around it, like Redux, I think Redux by itself really, when it's introduced too soon, really complicates things for people. And that's when people are complaining about how hard it is to learn React, it's those things, because React itself is actually very, very simple. And that's one of the things that's making me so excited about the future of React is that, the new features that they're, bringing are like additive and make it more practical to use, simpler features of JavaScript. That's about as much as I can tell you about that. I'm sworn to secrecy. But it's going to really, really simplify learning React in great ways. We might be able to rival Vue in that, in the learnability. A lot of people seem to think that Vue is really easy to learn. I'm not sure. I've never tried to teach it to people, but whenever I try to teach React, it's always JavaScript that they're stumbling on. So the less JavaScript you have to know to still be productive, the easier it is to learn is what I found in frameworks. And at least that's been pretty consistent in my experience.
Yeah, I think the thing with Vue is that it has a very slow ramp up. Like you can start a Vue application similar to like an old school AngularJS or jQuery application. Just import a library and do some stuff. And I think that's where that easy to learn attraction probably comes from. Whereas like with the more mature frameworks, React or Angular, if you don't use the CLI, you spend 3 days trying to get an application to even run.
Yeah, you know, That is definitely another criticism. That's why, so I've got a free course on egghead.io about React, like the introduction to React. And part of the reason, so every single lesson in that like 20 something lesson course is entirely encapsulated in a single index.html file. And the reason for that is to show that, hey, yeah, like React itself is really simple and you can do everything the same way that your grandparents did. You know, maybe not grandparents, maybe my grandparents. No, actually my grandparents are not alive. That got dark. Okay. So but like the way that we used to build applications just in an index.html, well, we never built applications this way, but the way you used to build web websites in an index.html. And the reason is just to show like a lot of it is like lots of the struggle with learning in general is you have like this wallpaper of abstraction. And it's knowing where to draw the lines between one abstraction to the next. And if you can draw those lines, then you can like understand them independently. When you learn them independently is when you can draw those lines clearly. And it makes you more effective at using them. And so that's why I don't use any tools or anything. It's just like straight up, take this index.html file, put it in your browser and you're learning React. But traditionally, like we just have to service such a broad spectrum of use cases. Like some people are trying to build a little tiny app that does like two or three things, and other people are trying to build Facebook. And we're like, why is it so hard to learn this thing? It's like, well, it's because you're trying to build this tiny little app, like it's Facebook or something. Like that's why it's so hard.
Do you mind if we step back? Just one of the things that you mentioned, like Redux and introducing Redux too early. I've heard, I think maybe you speak before and maybe like Corey House mentioned that Redux is really for state management being shared amongst components. And when I work with applications and work with others on applications, there seems to be some trickery or some confusion as to what goes in a Redux store and what goes in local state and how you might organize an application to effectively manage that. I often find that, you know, what starts in local state is often needing to be extracted and pulled out into Redux. Can you maybe address that or give some tips and tricks on how you might avoid something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that made Redux really popular is it solved the prop drilling problem where you have like this state that like the conventional wisdom in React is if you have two components that are side by side that need the same state, then you'll move the state up to their least common parent and then you'll pass it down. But what happens when you're doing that, I'm doing all these hand motions, but the people who are just listening aren't going to get any of that. But what happens when you're doing that is maybe the least common parent is like six levels up. And so you have to pass the state through six levels of components. And then you have to if you need to be able to update that state, you also have to pass this function to update it. And so that problem is aggravated by people's tendency to break out components prematurely. So we're like, oh, my component's render method is 6 lines long. I need to make another one. When in actuality, like, you probably are fine. Just like, you know, 20, 30, 100 line render method is totally fine. But like, in any case, it can be really frustrating passing all these props around. And so Redux came around and they're like, hey, we've got this global state. We need to get this global state in different places. So we'll use this obscure context API, which at the time was not official. It was like, hey, don't use this, it'll break. But everybody used it anyway. And so we've got this context API, we can get things around really easily. And so coincidentally, Redux solved the prop drilling problem and everybody loved it for that. People didn't love Redux necessarily for the things that it was intended to solve. They just loved it because it meant they didn't have to pass props all over the place. And so now that we have the context API, like the official context API, you can use that directly and people do, and it's really a elegant API. And so if you just need to solve this sharing state between components and you need to get some state deep down into your React tree, now it's a lot easier to do that just using the context API directly. And then we can use Redux for the things that it's intended to solve, which is stuff like deterministic updates of your state, serialization of your data for like error monitoring or like rehydration or something like that. But where people really fall over is when they start using Redux to store things that are not global state. And I see this all the time. You have a form element that has some validation logic in it or something. People will put that validation logic and all the state into the Redux store. And now every component in the entire application has access to that. None of them actually need to use it, but it's it adds this layer of indirection that basically means, practically speaking, anytime you need to make a change to this logic, you're opening 30 tabs to find out where all of that state is coming from, where the dispatchers are, where the action creators are, and it just gets to be a total mess. And it's also quite hard to test. I mean, like the reducers themselves are pretty easy to test, and the action creators, yeah, unless they're like Redux Thunk or something. But yeah, it adds a huge layer of complexity for something that probably could just be local state. And even if two components in a Redux app need the same state, you could probably still use regular state and just lift that state to a least common parent. You know, prop drilling is not a bad thing. It's just bad. Like it can be annoying when you're going multiple layers. So anyway, to kind of get back to, like I said, a lot of words, let me sum it up. Some things that you can do is try to avoid bringing in Redux in the first place. So don't bother breaking out your React components to make them smaller just because you like the way that they look when they're smaller, because that aggravates the prop drilling problem. So when you're going to break something out, you have to ask yourself, why am I breaking this out? And it should be a good reason. Rather than jumping straight to Redux, maybe try using context directly. There's probably not a whole lot of state that you need to share throughout your entire application. So you can use context, and you can also use context in like one section of your app as well. You don't have to use it for the entire app. And so like try going for some of those strategies. And then I would actually reach for another state management library before Redux. So I like Unstated pretty well. We were successful using Unstated on PayPal Me, the PayPal Me project. And there's also React Copyright, which looked interesting, but I haven't had a chance to use that. So there are some libraries I would use before I jump into Redux, because I feel like it just adds a layer of indirection that's, for most use cases, pretty unnecessary.
Okay. Do you have a preferred React architecture, the way that you organize your React apps?
So are you asking about like where I put my files and things, or is there a particular aspect of React architecture you're curious about?
Sort of like how you're organizing your files and how also your components and yeah.
You mentioned maybe not reaching for Redux, or
I'm a big fan of this folder or directory structure that I learned from Ryan Florence like many years ago, and I'm still really happy with it. That and maybe I can find the gist and I'll link you to it. Where basically every like the folder structure almost maps pretty directly to your URL structure. And so every slash represents a screens directory. And so if you have slash, that will be like your source directory, and then your index.js will be at the slash, or like, it's kind of hard to describe this, to be honest, but in your source directory, you'll have a screens directory. Inside of there, you'll have home and about and contacts or whatever. And then inside of those, if they have nested routes inside of them, then they will also have screens directories. And then you can configure Webpack in a nice way so that each one of these can have a shared directory, and you put shared files in those directories. And you put files that like you hoist or you the basic idea is that you keep files as close to where they're relevant as possible. So co-location is a really useful idea in folder structure. So I'm really big into co-location. I have a blog post about this. It's called What We Can Learn About Code Comments, or What We Can Learn About Scaling Applications from Code Comments. And basically the idea is, like, I think it was more popular a while ago, but I still see apps where you'll have a test directory that mirrors your source directory. And so they're like totally separate, but lots of apps, they're kind of merging them. And the blog post is kind of about that idea of like why you would care to merge your test and source directory, put your test right next to the files that they're testing. And the reason the reasoning is that when we're documenting our code, we put that documentation as close to where it's relevant as possible. Like sometimes in line, right? Like most of the time it's in line. You don't have a docs directory that like mirrors the source directory. That would be silly, right? So, so we do the same thing with our tests. We do the same thing with our CSS, with our whatever else, try to keep things as close. Actually, I talked to Dan Abramoff about this, and he said a quote that I really like. It was, things that change together should belong together. So if you find that you're changing these files all the time together because they're relevant, then try to keep them as close to each other as possible. And that's more of a principle about architecture that hopefully is kind of what you were looking for.
Yeah. So would you also like, even kind of extending that principle, you know, kind of be a proponent of like the stylized components and keeping your styles with your...
Yeah. I'm huge into the CSS and JS thing. I built Glamorous, which was for a while one of the most popular CSS and JS libraries. I think it may have succeeded or gotten more downloads than styled components at one point, but it was only because Storybook had a dependency on Glamorous. But yeah, so Glamorous is now deprecated in favor of Emotion. So anyway, but the idea of having your styles, and it's the same thing with JSX too, co-locating things as close as possible, and then providing the power of JavaScript as well, is like such a good idea. And I'm very bullish on that.
All right. One of the other things, and you were talking a little bit about testing just now, but you've got a website, testingjavascript.com. You want to tell us a little bit about that site?
Yeah, sure. So I have been doing Egghead.io and front-end masters for like 4 years. Been really into that teaching thing. I really, it's actually a secret, but not really a secret because I'm always telling it. But my learning process is teaching. And I think that everybody's learning process, like you solidify what you learn by teaching. And so I've actually only been doing this software thing professionally for 4 years. So I've been teaching as long as I've been doing this. And you really accelerate your learning through teaching. So anyway, I've been doing this for a long time through these services. And Egghead approached me and said, hey, listen, like we know that you have a lot of testing content. What if we made a micro site, kind of like what WestBoss does or Tyler McGinnis? They've got these course sites where they have a bunch of content on a particular topic. And so they approached me with the idea. I thought it sounded cool. And so they are building the site. They're doing like all the stuff. I'm taking care of the content. And it's an insane amount of content. Like it's over 100 Egghead videos, which if you know Egghead style, it's like they're like 2 to 5 minute videos of very, very dense content. 100 videos is a lot, and it's over 5 hours of content, of extremely dense content on testing. Everything from like very, very fundamentals of testing, just like JavaScript itself. Like we build a testing framework, we build an assertion library, we build the mocking capabilities that are in Jest, so you can understand what mocking is really doing. And yeah, we do all of these things in an effort to give you a good foundation of what testing even is. And then we go into React specific stuff. We also do just web application stuff, like with Cypress doing end-to-end tests. And there's a section or a pretty sizable course on configuring Jest to be perfect for what your environment is, especially if you're using Webpack. And then there's a section on using the DOM testing library, which I wrote with any framework. And I show you how to do that with Angular, AngularJS, Vue, and a whole bunch of others. So yeah, it's a pretty comprehensive, really, really big course. I also talk a lot about static analysis as a form of testing. So like ESLint and Prettier and TypeScript or Flow, tools like that as a testing mechanism. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I've been working on it for a very, very, very long time, and it's coming out very, very soon. Like more very than the varies. Yeah. Anyway, it's coming out soon.
That sounds really awesome.
Thank you. Actually, depending on when people listen to this, it might already be out. So the early bird is on October 19th, and it officially is released on the 25th.
Do you have any advice for people just getting started? Maybe, you know, trying to break into the industry, or maybe trying to kind of improve themselves. What would you say to them?
First off, I would say that software is very hard. Don't let anybody tell you that it's easy, because it's totally not. And so when you're struggling, realize that you're struggling because it's hard, not because you're dumb or stupid. Software is not easy, but it's super rewarding when you get it. And so like you fight through this thing, it takes like silly amount of hours, and then you finally solve it. And it's like the smallest thing, but you feel so good about it. And you're constantly learning. That'd be the first thing is just recognize that it's not easy, and you're not stupid if you can't figure it out. It's just a hard thing. So the next thing is in the process of your learning, like try to build something that you're motivated to build. Some people will say you've got to learn like the fundamentals first before you can touch any production code or whatever. Like, I think that's ridiculous. Do motivation-based learning. So you should be motivated to build the thing that you're trying to build. And that motivation is what's going to carry you through when things are really hard. So try to find something that you'll be motivated, like just intrinsically motivated to build. And I had another thought, and it was So in the process of building this thing, you will probably learn stuff, right? That's kind of the reason we're doing this. So those things that you learn are things that other people do not know. There are people on the planet who don't know the things that you're learning. Lots of beginners think that, oh, there's like all this content in the world. What could I contribute? And like the whole teaching thing is not necessarily about like whether or not you're introducing something new into the world. Most of the stuff that I create is not new. But the fact that it's coming from you, there are going to be two big things that come out of that. First off, and most importantly, is the learning that you get, the way that it solidifies what you know, is going to be really helpful to like your learning. And so doing that teaching, whether it be in blog post or a talk or whatever. And the second thing is like you can reach people that the current content isn't reaching. You'll be surprised. You go to a meetup, you teach how this works in JavaScript, and there will be people there who don't know how this works in JavaScript. And you think like, hold on a second, but there's like billions of blog posts about this already. How could you not know? And it's because they just never saw it before. Like they never ran into that. And if you hadn't given that talk that there's already a billion blog posts about it, then those people would still be ignorant of that thing. And so it's about accessibility. It's about who you're able to reach, especially if you know a language other than English, then there's a lot of opportunity for you, because lots of programming content is in English. And so like blogging in your native language can really help people who speak your native language better than English. So yeah, there's just a ton of opportunity to teach. So take like, especially when you're just getting started, you don't know as much. And so you can teach the newer stuff better because you are kind of still in that situation yourself. So you can relate better. There's that curse of knowledge where like you can't relate to people who don't know the things that you already know, right? So we make these assumptions about what people know when we know stuff, I guess. So yeah, those are a couple of tips. And then like if as you're going and you're like, I just really want to get better at, you know, framework X or whatever, that's when you dive into the fundamentals and you figure out things. Cause now your motivation is to get better at that framework. And so that will motivate you to dive in. And so, yeah, I tell people just go out and build stuff and figure things out and then come back and circle around and get into the fundamentals, figure out, okay, so what is React doing when I'm using this JSX thing? And what is like, why do I have to put a key on an element when I'm iterating over an array in React? Like why is that? And you can dive in, the source code and early on, it'll probably be over your head and that's totally fine. I still look at React source code and I'm like, what are all these bitwise operators doing in this code? Like, so there's a lot of opportunity to see stuff that you're not really comfortable with, but that's kind of what gets you in a good frame of mind, I guess. And it's a lot of fun to dive into that stuff and find out that I still have a lot to learn.
Excellent. Speaking of diving in, do you have any resources that you might be able to point people towards who might be trying to get into React, JavaScript in general?
Yeah, so earlier I talked about my beginner guide. It's called The Beginner's Guide to React. It's just over an hour long, and it's very dense material, and it's totally free. And I get reviews every single day in my email at 11 p.m. So right before I fall asleep, I see like what people are saying about my course. And it's on a 7-point scale. And I don't think I've ever gotten less than a 6. So it's really positive. And people like leave comments and stuff saying that it's really been helpful for them. So yeah, like thousands and thousands of people have watched this course and recommended it to people. So I can't recommend that highly enough, even though I made it myself, just because it seems to be helping people a lot.
Awesome. And if people want to sort of get in touch with you, do you have any like social media plugs that you'd like to give here?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Kent C. Dodds and my handle is Kent C. Dodds everywhere, all over. Yeah, I have a pretty unique name and putting my middle initial in there makes me even better for SEO. So yeah, you can find me.
All right, Kent. Well, thanks so much. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you. It was great.
That was Kent C. Dodds. Kent is a JavaScript engineer at PayPal and is active in the open source community. He's also a teacher. He likes his family, JavaScript, and React.
If you'd like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.